Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Man, good to hear you today. Get up with you. We're going to talk a little text. We'll be speaking on the text for the 15th Sunday after Pentecost. The texts are for September the 2nd, 2018. All of us here in the U.S. of A., also known as Labor Day weekend, which means for some places likely to have a little bit lighter attendance. Schools will be out, few folks will be off work. But who knows? Sometimes that balances out with visitors and such. But definite sort of shift in the feel, I think. And we recognize that today by shifting our approach just a little bit to the text. Tell us what we've got out in front of us, Bubba.
Now, that there was a segue. It never occurred to me. Labor Day shift into town. I like it.
Let me say, I just want to say to everybody, we had the realization a few weeks ago after I was listening to an old football broadcast from the days when Keith Jackson and Frank Broyles were a great broadcasting team. Now, if you don't have a clue who those guys are, that's okay. Delmer and I know that we are old, but I've listened to many a ball game with those two, and just sort of dawned on me, in our pairing, Bubba, you're really the play-by-play, and I'm kind of the color guy. So...
Something along those lines.
Yeah. Back at it.
So anyway, we've had a great summer of working through a kind of a series on David and Solomon, and that kind of has come to an end. And so we are thinking we're just going to revert to what has been our standard practice of going with what I call the regular track and not do the semi-continuous. So the one with the gospel and the Hebrew scriptures commenting on the gospel, et cetera. You know what I'm talking about. So if you're looking for commentary on the Song of Solomon, it's not coming from us today.
We did discuss a couple of extra biblical sources on that text, but you'll have to private message us to get those.
Enough said. Let's move on. So today we're going to talk a little bit about the gospel, Hebrew scripture, Psalm 15, track about law and what defiles, etc. And then we're going to talk a little bit about James and being doers of the word, not merely hearers. But first, we're going to dive into Mark. One of the good things about Mark right now that excites me, it's a different kind of series, as it were, if you're mm-hmm. talking about that kind of preaching. But from now until Christ the King, which is the, you know, right after Thanksgiving, right before Advent starts, last Sunday in November, except for All Saints Sunday, if you move All Saints to Sunday, which some people don't, everything's in Mark. We're taking six chapters of Mark, starting here with 7 and ending in 13 with the little apocalypse, and we're moving through a period of Jesus' ministry, his traveling around both sides of the Sea of Galilee, where he's a kind of a popular teacher, healer, dialoguer with both Jews and Greeks. That's really what we've got going on. And you have some set pieces where he's teaching the crowd and the disciples are following. And every once in a while, he has not exactly confrontations in Mark, more kind of like dialogues with confused scribes and Pharisees mm-hmm, or confused mm-hmm. disciples. It's a clarifying time. This is really for the author of the book of Mark when he's trying to set up who Jesus was and what his teaching was. And remember, and this is important, remember this is aimed at the early church. So every once in a while, including today, you have some stuff that's about the early church's conversations with the Jewish community around them. It's kind of not said, now, when you're accusing us of not following the law, let me tell you a story back when Jesus was around. They don't say it that way, but that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So he's telling a story that helps clarify that. So today we have a little of all of these. There's a little bit of toddling around. There's talking to the crowd. There's a little dialogue with the Pharisees and the scribes. And there's a conversation with his disciples, all of which go around this business of not obeying the law, and defiling, and I mean, to us, it seems like a kind of third grade kindergarten issue. Did you wash your hands?
Yeah.
You know, did you wash your hands? I have actually had my children, who unfortunately spent too much time in Sunday school sometimes, when I would challenge them about washing their hands, one of them quoted the scripture at me. It's not what comes from the outside that defiles.
Let me imagine which of your sons might have quoted that at you.
Well, I got a lawyer and a Lutheran pastor now, so it could have been either one of them.
That's true. That's the point taken.
So, anyway, he deals with it today. That's interesting the way this falls out. What you've got is a cut up text, and there's a good reason it's cut up. You know, I often say it's important to pay attention to what's left out. So, but we have three pieces of a larger unit, 7:1-23. I joke and say it's the Reader's Digest condensed version, or maybe the Victorian Classics abridged. It cuts to the chase, removes Mark's editorial insertions. What we Southerners sometimes are wont to do, as Mark Twain says, I told you that so that I could tell you this other story.
That's right.
Yeah. And you've talked to people that say, now, he had this 57 Ford that ran, but let me tell you where he got that Ford. You know, it's kind of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the insertions today had to do with explaining to the Gentiles the Jewish law, and that didn't seem necessary to the committee. Right. And another one was talking a little bit about Korban. It's about stuff that's that cuts the flow.
Right.
If you're and I think that's what lectionary committee was thinking. Let's just tell the story and leave the parentheses out. And that's what's left out today.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's not worry too much about what Korban is and how they were taking the offerings and setting them aside. And so that,
None of that matters in terms of preaching.
In terms of the purpose for today.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so sometimes when they cut stuff out of the text, I get upset because they cut the good stuff.
Yeah.
Today, they're just saying, it's not important if you're trying to preach. That's kind of where that comes.
I do regret leaving out verse 18 today, in which one translation, Jesus says to the disciples, are you so dull? Because they just don't get it. And you get the point. By now, Mark chapter 7, there's been a lot of action. Because, Mark moves quickly. So we're well along the way. Jesus has been with these disciples for quite a while. And poor guys, over and over and over again, it's an exercise in missing the point.
Yeah.
And this is one of those days where that humanity of Jesus comes through.
Yeah.
Are you boys really that thick?
Well, I hate to say it, that for the most part in all the Gospels, John in particular, but also in Mark and Matthew and Mark and Luke, they sometimes come off as kind of the Keystone Cops. They just the gang that can't shoot straight.
We love them, because they are us. So
this divides out into three sections, which is interesting in the way in which a lot of the stories, and you'll see this throughout the rest of it with these stories with Mark, is that it deals with three groups. You have a dialogue with the crowd, and you have a dialogue with the scribes and Pharisees. You have a dialogue with the crowd, and then you have an explanation to the disciples. You see this over and over. Jesus makes a pronouncement to the crowd, and then he explains it to the disciples. And often this is set up by a conflict with the scribes and Pharisees. That's exactly what happens today. So you've got the first section of this is 1-8. And he's talking with that's sort of the scribes and Pharisees dialogue. And then 14 and 15, that's where they cut in. You know, they leave a little bit out and they cut in. And he talks to the crowd again. And he's telling the crowd what's going on. And then 21 through 23, though it doesn't state it up front, this is an explanation to the disciples in a smaller group. So as you look at this is that the key text here is 15. Outside in or inside out. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the key cornerstone. There's nothing outside a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile. And the whole Jewish ritual law had to do with what you could take in. And sometimes we get to the point that we forget that the rule is about relationships, relationship with God and relationship with each other, and we focus on the rule. And anytime obedience to the rule ruins a relationship, you've misapplied the rule. Mm-hmm. That's the key that Jesus is getting
at. Well stated, yes.
So the structure of this flows like this. There's the charge against the disciples. And usually this is responded to in Mark with a defense by saying something Jesus mm-hmm. said. Mm-hmm. And so you've got 1-5 is kind of the charge against the disciples and a kind of an explanation in 3 or 4 that was left in about one of those little editorial comments. See the parent to make sure everybody understands unless they worship many other traditions they observe, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have a countercharge, which is in 6, 7, and 8. Isaiah prophesied rightly about you hypocrites. As is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. And he's touching into the issue of the heart here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Their hearts are far from me. And this is the key point where he gets to, is the issue is where does your heart lie?
Right.
And this is language that's been interesting to me. To find that I didn't remember this growing up, so this is different. But the more I say Baptist/evangelical world, they talk about a lot about having a heart for this and a heart for that. Mm-hmm. And I've had to do a little Lutheran in my head translating about what does it mean to have a heart for something.
Yeah.
And this helps me see this. I think this is part of that core, that what's in your heart is so important. Mm-hmm. And it comes out in actions, but your external actions without it coming out of your heart. Am I reading that right, John?
Well, I think so. And I think you're right. There are some traditions that are a little more oriented. Pietist may be a good word for that. And what you feel. And what's in your heart, and it's in our language. We talk about that, you know. That's a good-hearted. He's a good-hearted man. He just can't, you know, get everything together.
So the counter danger there is that your feelings become more important than facts.
Correct.
Feelings become more important than the tradition of the truth. And I'm just saying that's the kind of the counter. So Jesus isn't as much talking about how you feel about a thing.
No.
As about your core.
Well, remember that when we think of heart, we tend to identify with feelings. A quote, biblical, if you will, and I want to be careful about talking about the biblical concept of anything, but the Bible's understanding of heart comes out of that Hebrew tradition. The heart is really the center of your will. It's the center of what does motivate you, inform you, etc. And so I think we have to get a rich reading of the heart here we do have to get out of our heads sometimes, of us, and yet we can't live completely in the range of just what we feel. Well, I feel that should be that. Well, okay, but connect your brain up a little bit too.
This is what Stephen Colbert was playing around with when he talked about truthiness.
Mm-hmm.
When he tried to talk about, I feel it should be true, so it must be true, that feeling issue. And I'm not denigrating people's feelings, but we have to understand that's not what it means when Jesus says, where's your heart? Right. It's not how you feel about it, but what's your core commitment? Mm-hmm. I remember M. Scott Peck and his The Road Less Traveled, his book on psychology, and he talked about starting out with love is the will. Love is the will to extend oneself for one's own or another's well-being. And, you know, we talk about love as the most important emotion, and he's taken it completely away from emotion and said it's will. It is, and sometimes you don't feel like it. So when he starts talking about issues of what comes out of the heart,
right?
He's not talking about what comes out of your feelings. He's coming out of your core commitments, your core will, and only God can change your heart. That's the deal.
Right.
And that's where he's going. He says, now, these external traditions are important as a reflection of one's core commitments, and they shape your commitments. I was thinking about one of my core commitments is my relationship with my wife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are things that, you know, we've been married 44 years in December. And there are things that we do that are simple little things that have just grown up. That's what we do. It's light a candle at dinner almost every night. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean anything. I can turn a light on. You know? And we do it in the daytime. It's just a ritual, that a meal, and us and our relationship to remind us of multitude of things. And that ritual is a reflection of the relationship and helps strengthen the relationship to remember to do that. But it doesn't create it.
Right.
And it's not something that we have. That I'm playing with that image. And so a lot of the religious traditions are important, but they're not the core. And that's what Jesus is getting at when he says, when you let the ritual overcome the relationships. And so he calls, listen to me and understand, there's nothing come outside the person going in that can defile. Now, that's a real challenge to Hebrew tradition about what you can and can't eat, etc. And as far as we can tell, Jesus basically kept kosher. There's no accusation that he did not.
Right.
So, but he said, it's what the things that come out that defile. This is an important tradition.
You're looking at the wrong things here. You're worried about the wrong things. And I think you're onto something. When we allow the ritual to become ossified, and we think that the ritual is the thing, that candle we light is the source of our love. No, it's not. And, you know, washing your hands is a good idea, but it's not about washing your hands. It's about something else. And I think that is a challenge for us. And we live in a time when the church becomes known for, you know, pointing the finger at people for this action and that action, and you're doing that and you're doing this. And I think, honestly, overlooking the heart sometimes, our own hearts, as well as what's in the heart of another. And you're right. I think Jesus has given us a very good and strong corrective here. I know we've got to include, you know, some of our other stuff. The Deuteronomy passage could be read as saying, but look how important the laws are.
Right.
Well, that's why the gospel and the Hebrew scripture are commenting on one another here. Yes, it is important. But even in the Deuteronomy passage, what does it sum up? You take care and you watch so that you won't forget the things your eyes have seen and that your ears have heard. It's connected to life. It's connected to that relationship. It's connected to the real world. It's not just the ritual, just the law. And
one of the things we constantly say is to be on guard against anti-Semitism in the simple way of saying, this is law, and over here we have the liberation of the gospel. There's a rich Hebrew prophetic tradition of calling people to calling people on just obeying the law without dealing with the heart and the forgiveness and the steadfast love and the mercy and those things. So Jesus isn't doing nothing new. He's just raising it up.
And it must be noted, we cannot let this opportunity pass. As Jesus is trying to clarify things here, he reaches back and grabs him a handful of Isaiah. If you're talking about the rich prophetic tradition,
yeah,
he just ratchets back there and grabbed him a handful of Isaiah and said, see, it's what this Isaiah fellow was talking about.
That's right. That's right. So the structure, once again, there's the charge, there's the counter charge, and then in 14, 15, and 21, 23, we have the pronouncement.
Right.
So you have the situation, you have the rebuttal, and then you have the pronouncement of the truth. And that's kind of the structure that lays out in those three sections. Mm-hmm. As I said, there's nothing new here. Jewish ritual is not an end in itself. And an important point, we're constantly tempted to fall into legalism. It would be rarely wrong to point a finger at the Jewish tradition and then to say, but we Christians, we got this all together. Mm-hmm. Lord have mercy, John. Between us, we got about 70, 80 years of working with churches. You can't do it like that. We've never done it this way here before. That's not how we do things. So mm-hmm. if we don't do it this way, you know, it has to be done this way. So it was developed for the relationships. So the way we do communion at the rail was created for an important purpose. But then sometimes we forget. I mean, you know that old story about the woman that kept cutting off the ends of the ham, put it in the... you had to cut the ends off to cook the ham. And they finally trace it back. Why do you do that? And they found out that great-great-grandma from Sweden had a pan that was
too big.
The pan was too short for American hams. She had to cut them off.
Man's too short. I love that story. Grandma's pan.
Grandma's pan. Sometimes we get all involved in that. One last story with this, and we're going to talk about James a minute. This is a true story. My first job was working in a daycare center. When I first got off the farm, I worked daycare center every afternoon, you know, minding the playground and feeding the kids and watching Sesame Street with them. That was kind of fun. And years later, I saw a documentary on Sesame Street, and I was fascinated. It brought me back to those days of doing that. And they were talking to the guy about how the kids paid attention to, you know, Muppets or guys actors crouching on the floor, sticking his hand up inside the Muppet. And they said, how do the little kids, 4 and 5 year olds who are on the show talking to the Muppets, deal with the humans? And he said, they just ignore them. They talk to the Muppets. They just don't even pay any attention to the humans. He said, in fact, one day, the actor who is Big Bird took off the top of the outfit and then stepped out of it. And this kid was looking at it, turned around and screamed, Mom, do you think Big Bird knows he has a man inside? And I think there's a core here that we get engaged in all this external ritual and begin to forget there's a human being inside, not only in us, but in everybody else. Yeah. And this Jesus calls us back to remembering the human within all our traditions, within all our everybody else.
That's
and the law is about how we treat one another.
Yeah,
as good children of God with one another.
Just real quickly, I think it behooves us to at least point out in the Psalm text, you may or may not be preaching that, but be aware of it.
Yeah.
With this framework, now read Psalm 15. Lord, who may abide? Who may dwell? And I love this. Those who walk blamelessly, do what is right, and speak the truth from where? From their heart. And the remainder of the Psalm, all of these specific examples, are relational.
Yep.
Okay? Don't slander with the tongue. Don't do evil to your friends. Don't take up a reproach against your neighbor. Stand by their oath, even to their hurt. Don't lend money, so on and so forth. It's there if our eyes are opened. It's not the law by itself, we're just back to a fundamental precept here. Why is the law given? For the good of humanity. The Sabbath is created for us, the humans, not the other way around. So even the Psalm text is a great support today. Yes, sir. Take us into James in this last couple of minutes.
This is one of those times the epistle really does play in with this, because it continues the dialogue of law and gospel. And in at the time of the Reformation, there was a discussion as to how the use of the law within the Christian community. There were those who wanted to just let go of the law, you know, and, you know, to New Testament Christians, you know, that kind of thing. And there were others who said, oh no, all this law still applies. And we still have that debate, you know, the people that are going to want to come down and quote Leviticus and this and that about various social issues, the law still applies. And others would say, you know, we've completely liberated from that. And so the discussion has to do with what is the role of the law. And there are several early, the Reformation folks talked about different uses of the law. One was to order human society. It had nothing to do with whether you got along, you know, you got saved or nothing, but you have to have some basic laws. And that's what we mean today when we talk about, I believe in the Ten Commandments, and we need, you know, they want to put the Ten Commandments in the courthouses, you know, basic of law, the rule of law. That's one. A second one is kind of like once you've been saved, then it's a guide for Christian ethics. You know, it's not how you get saved. It's not if you obey these 10 things, then you're saved. But because you're saved, therefore we shape human society. But a real important third use, it's called the third use of the law, is reflected in James in verses 22 through 24. Be doers of the word, not merely hearers. For if they are hearers of the word and not doers, they are like those who look at themselves in a mirror. For they look at themselves and go on going away immediately forgot what they were like. I love all that lines. And the law as a mirror was you look at yourself and you measure. You say, I do not measure up. Mm-hmm. One thing is I need God's grace. That kind of draws you to the needs of realizing, turning to the grace of God, because I have not been able.
Right.
Obey these. But the other thing it does is it calls you, honestly look in the mirror, then it calls you to, as James talks about, be a doer. Don't just sit and listen. Be a doer of the word. So this is a good text to play with that dialogue of what does it mean to be a doer and not merely a hearer who deceives himself by hearing it. So that's right, brother. Reminds me of that old story my daddy liked about the man that every Sunday at the sermon, he'd say, that's right, preacher, you sure told him. Every week, you sure told him. So one week, that was the only man there. A snowstorm, nobody could get there, and the preacher just unloaded everything he'd been saying for the last month on this one guy. And the man came out and said, boy, you sure told him this morning. Too bad they weren't here to hear it.
Yep. You know? It's just not going in.
Yeah. And that's what James is getting at. Look at yourself in reflection here. Look at what's being said and realize you need the grace of God.
Yeah.
Turn to God. All right.
I think that's a beautiful way to think about what does the law hold up for us? Because you're right. It's an active discussion to this day. Just how seriously are we supposed to take this law, these words of the Bible? And I have some highly motivated friends who just, you know, they just really get focused and I'm like, yeah, I take it really seriously, but what is the real purpose here? And this James gives us this great image. We all line up and look in the mirror and go, yeah, I am a sinner in need of the grace of God. And so is everybody else. And how does that lead us to a little more humility, perhaps, in our reading, in our testimony, in our preaching, and in living out the gospel? Well, Bubba, we've managed to run right through them there today. I've enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. Hope everybody has a safe holiday and a good time. I'm looking forward to getting started in the fall. And these texts out of Mark are going to be awfully good for us.
So I got an important question.
All right.
When do the Volunteers open up and who they play?
Well, we'll be playing a little Virginia Tech coming up here shortly in Labor Day weekend. So I'll have to let you know Let me just say, my expectations aren't necessarily that high. I will not be setting myself up for a fall.
Since I went to a basketball school and then went to another basketball school for my graduate work, we just won't discuss football too much this fall. There, will we? All right.
We won't worry about it. I misspoke, by the way. I think I said Virginia Tech. I'm still stuck on the battle at Bristol. West Virginia, who is a top 20 team. So best wishes to my West Virginia folks. And Travis Norville, if you're back off sabbatical, if you're listening, we tip your hat to you. All right, Bubba. Not much left for us to do other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Lock and Key by Silent Partner. We go out this session with the beautiful hymn, Search Me, O God. The text is by J. Edwin Orr. The tune is a Maori tune. It is sung beautifully today by Jaharna South.
Try me, O Savior. Know my thoughts, I pray. You set me free.